Make sure this season to check out Walter's self-poured beer wall, which includes 24 different items, including Fireside Chat, Vienna Lager, and Green City IPA. Visit waltersdc.com for more information.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Here's the set. Taylor, huge lead, he's going. The pitch swung on it, line to left, it's a base hit. Taylor slid into third, will get up and come in to score as Rosario chases it into the corner. Into second with an RBI double is Connor Joe. And the Pirates are back in front here in the eighth inning with their 10th hit of the afternoon. It's Pittsburgh 4 and Washington 3. Brady sets, delivers. Swing and a long drive to right field. Thomas going back, way back, looking up, and it's off the wall and in play. One run has scored. Two runs have scored. And Telez will stop at third, in at second. With a two-run double is Brian Reynolds. And the Pirates now with runners second and third. And two runs home. It's Pittsburgh 8 and Washington 3.
And welcome to Nats Chat for Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. Along with MassinSports.com, Nationals insider Mark Zuckerman, who is at Nationals Park. I'm Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi Podcast. Well, the good news is that the rain ended up not being much of a problem on Monday. The forecast for the Washington, D.C. area for Monday called for quite a bit of rain. And so that Nationals 2024 regular season home opener appeared to be in jeopardy, but the rain stopped. And while, yes, it was cloudy, it was cool, the weather certainly ended up being acceptable for playing. And so we on Monday did have that Nats 2024 regular season home opener. And the game actually was uninterrupted by rain. But the result of the game was a loss. And that is the bad news. An 8-4 loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates at Nationals Park in game one of a three-game series. The Nats now are 1-3 over their first four games in a regular season for a sixth consecutive season. If you can believe that, that is odd. The Pirates, meantime, 5-0 in a regular season for the first time since 1983. This episode of the Nats Chat Podcast for the Nats regular season home opener brought to us by Mason Kalfas at Zenith Legal. Mason Kalfas and his team specialize in placing partners and associates at medium-sized and large law firms in Washington, D.C. and across the country. Mason's number is 202-486-3535. You could also check out his website, zenithlegal.com. Also, we this season are offering something special, paid shout-outs. If you want to wish someone a happy birthday or wish someone well or congratulate someone, whatever, we will put forth a shout-out for you. Email Tim Shovers at natschatpodcast@gmail.com. We later in the show have a shout-out. Mark, we on Monday had a sellout crowd at Nationals Park. Official attendance, 40,405. The crowd was alive, but the Nats pitching again, not too good. The offense again, not good enough. And the result was a third loss in four games.
Yeah, unfortunately, Al, I do sense some recurring trends here four games in. It doesn't mean this is going to hold up in the long run, but so far, I think a couple things that we can pick up on. Number one, they're not scoring runs early in games. They're waiting until the seventh inning to try to get going offensively. And while they have shown an ability to make things happen late in games, it's a tough way to go about this. You got to start making starting pitchers work harder. You got to try to score some more runs early, maybe play with a lead for a change instead of feeling like it's this uphill climb every single night. That's number one. Number two is that the bullpen, which I'll admit coming into the year, I thought was maybe their best strength. I thought they did a nice job this winter of adding veterans who have pitched late innings before. And they had this specifically in mind, the idea being take some of the pressure off their usual A bullpen guys. Don't feel like you have to use them all the time in close games late. And that situation came up to a T in this home opener. Kyle Finnegan and Hunter Harvey not available after pitching the previous 2 days. So you go with Matt Barnes, Tanner Rainey, two guys who have pitched late innings and had success in the past, and it blew up on them. And you saw that in this one. You saw, obviously, Finnegan struggle with the blown save the day before. Hunter Harvey struggled the day before that. There have been some individual good performances out of the bullpen, but in totality, it has not been anywhere close to that like reliable group that I think a lot of us thought it would be coming into the year, at least four games into this.
No question. And the Nats starting pitching has not been much better. I mean, the Nats over four games have yet to have a single outing from a starting pitcher that you can honestly label a good outing. I mean, the last two outings have been like, you know, kind of mid, you know, Jake Irvin and Mackenzie Gore, but Josiah Gray in game one, not good. Patrick Corbin in game two, not good. So the Nats pitching certainly has been a problem. But yes, the work of the bullpen on Monday was a big problem. Now, as Mark just said, Kyle Finnegan, Hunter Harvey, essentially unavailable on Monday due to having pitched on each of the previous 2 days. Although, like we talked about, Harvey struggled on Saturday, Finnegan struggled on Sunday afternoon. So the idea that had one or both been available for Monday, things would have turned out differently, you know, who the heck knows. Also, there apparently is an illness going around the Nationals clubhouse. Jesse Winker got yanked from the game and inning into the game due to being sick. Reliever Jordan Weems was out for this game due to being sick. And so what you got from the Nats bullpen on Monday, four Nats relievers officially combining to allow five runs in 3 2/3 innings on a staggering 10 hits, 4 walks, and 2 wild pitches. This was not good. Now, the first two relievers really weren't that bad. Derek Law, Robert Garcia. Law officially tossed 1 1/3 scoreless innings. He, in the top of the sixth, did allow an inherited runner to score, but the run scored off these two, like, cheapy infield singles that were given up by Law. So he, to me, really wasn't that bad. Robert Garcia officially allowed a run in 2/3 of an inning, but the first out that he got was big. Came into the game top of the seventh, runners on first and second, 2 outs. Nats down 3-1, generated a big swinging strikeout of O'Neill Cruz. So far, not too bad with Law and Garcia, but then came Matt Barnes and Tanner Rainey, and they had really rough outings. Barnes officially allowed 2 runs in 2/3 of an inning, but he was a mess in what ended up being a 3-run 8th for the Pirates. Came into the game top of the 8th, runner on 2nd, 1 out, game tied at 3. Barnes, to the first batter he faced, gave up a tie-breaking 1 out RBI double by Connor Joe to left field for a 4-3 Pirates lead. Barnes gave up a 2 out RBI hustle double by Key Brian Hayes on an odd double. This was like a seeing eye grounder up the middle for a 5-3 Pirates lead. Hayes astutely charged towards second base, which momentarily was not being covered by any Nats player. Barnes then gave up a 2 out RBI single by Andrew McCutchen to left field for a 6-3 Pirates lead. And Barnes wasn't done. He issued a 2 out wild pitch. He then issued a 2 out 5-pitch walk of Jack Suwinski. And then Tanner Rainey, top of the 9th, he allowed 2 runs on a double, 2 singles, 2 walks, and a wild pitch. He in the inning threw 40 pitches. With those caveats of small sample size, gotta see more, etc., Rainey, who last regular season, remember, pitched in a mere 1 major league game off having undergone Tommy John surgery in August 2022, has not looked good in either of his 2 outings so far in this regular season. So that was not easy to stomach, what went down with Matt Barnes and Tanner Rainey on Monday.
No, it wasn't. And like I said, this is what they thought they had addressed over the winter and right into spring training with some of their signings. The whole idea was try to have less of a gap in talent between the A bullpen and the B bullpen. And what you saw here was a significant gap, although not that the A bullpen's been great so far either. You know, Matt Barnes is a former closer for the Red Sox, a long and pretty distinguished career. Now, he was hurt last year with the Marlins, had hip surgery, looked great in spring training. It was an abbreviated spring because he signed late, looked good in his first outing in Cincinnati, but this one was a mess, you know. Hard contact. You mentioned earlier on, the Pirates did benefit from a lot of little bunts and rolling, you know, little dribblers down the third base line or some seeing eye singles. Barnes was hit hard. One of the outs he recorded was a drive to the warning track by Brian Reynolds. So it's not like he was the victim of some bad luck there. And Tanner Rainey, the velocity was up, so that was better from him, but the results still are not there. And he, you know, This is not the guy that we had seen prior to Tommy John. Doesn't mean he won't get there eventually. And maybe it really is a matter of him getting to a rhythm of pitching every few days in the big leagues again for the first time in a while. But I think you're going to see, you kind of already get a hint of this, that Davey is not going to be using him in high leverage spots, I don't think, for the foreseeable future. What concerned me there, 40 pitches. And I get it, like, you don't want to burn another guy. And you don't even want to have to get somebody else warmed up. You just need one more out from him. But it was painful to watch. And you hope that 40 pitches on a cold day on April 1st isn't a bad thing for Tanner Rainey health-wise. So this really did not go the way they wanted. Now, maybe if Jordan Weems is available, maybe he's one of the ones used in it. I thought maybe we'd see Dylan Floro, another guy with late inning experience. He wasn't used here. It may be a little while until Davey kind of gets a sense of what the roles are, who does he trust, who does he not trust. But boy, you would think with as much talent as they have back there, you can find two, three, four guys that you do have some faith in and not always have to go to the same ones.
You know, you go back to the exhibition season and you had a good number of Nats relievers who had impressive numbers. And here we are now just four games into the regular season and it's a different story. And it is another reminder of those exhibition stats, man. Be careful. Buyer beware if you're going to go by spring training stats. And, you know, look, not to overreact to four games, but if you've been a Nats fan for any substantial length of time, you know the bullpen has been a problem for years, even when the Nats were good. I mean, everyone remembers 2017. Everyone remembers 2019. Those teams were good in spite of the bullpen, not anywhere close to because of the bullpen. It's been this bizarre Achilles heel of Mike Rizzo. He has had a hard time of constructing good bullpens in off seasons. Too early to declare anything about this bullpen, but so far, not so good. Hey, Al Galdi here for Window Nation. Baseball season finally is here. Spring finally is here. And that means a great offer from Window Nation for listeners of the Nats Chat podcast. If your windows are cracked or leaking and or won't open or stay open, now is the time to call Window Nation, which is offering the following deal to listeners of the Nats Chat podcast. Two free windows for every two windows that you buy, plus zero down, zero interest, and zero payments for 24 months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com and make sure that you tell Window Nation that you want the deal that you heard about from Al Galdi on the Nats Chat podcast. Upgrade the look, feel, and value of your home with great new Window Nation windows. Window Nation is the best, and take advantage of the offer. Two free windows for every two windows that you buy, plus zero down, zero interest, and zero payments for 24 months. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. That's 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. And make sure that you tell Window Nation that you want the deal that you heard about from Al Galdi on the Nats Chat podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Now the set, the 0-1. Thomas, a line drive, base hit right field. Robles rounding 30, he's going to try to score. Olivares with a throw to the plate, and the Robles goes in standing, the tag not made, and the Nationals are on the board. Robles in the back door, standing up. RBI single Lane Thomas, his fourth RBI, and the Nationals on the scoreboard for the first time here at home. It's Pittsburgh 2 and the Nationals 1.
So Mackenzie Gore, Nat starter on Monday, got the honor of starting the regular season home opener for this season. Big season for Gore, obviously. He is viewed as a potential ace. He has so much talent. Gore on Monday officially allowed 3 runs in 5 1/3 innings. Gave up 5 hits, which were made up of 2 doubles and 3 singles. He issued 2 hit-by-pitches. Did have 6 strikeouts versus 2 walks, so you like that. But he over his 5 1/3 innings threw a whopping 101 pitches, 62 strikes versus 39 balls. He really labored over the first 2 innings, a total of 47 pitches over what was a scoreless first inning and then a second inning in which he allowed 2 runs. Now, he then was better. He, after allowing the 2 runs, retired 8 consecutive batters, but then he got back to having some problems. Scoreless top of the 5th, issued a 1-out walk and a 2-out hit-by-pitch, and he and a Pirates 1-run 6 was charged with a run off giving up a leadoff double by Henry Davis to the left field corner. Gore did end his outing in a positive way, a swinging strikeout of O'Neill Cruz. So the outing was not all bad, but hard to call this a good outing for Mackenzie Gore.
I agree with that. I do think I want to call it kind of an encouraging outing, though, and here's why. Those first 2 innings he was laboring, he was coming out with all kinds of adrenaline coursing through his veins. He was pumping 98. I think he may have even hit 99 on one pitch. And he admitted that adrenaline can be a good thing, but only if you use it the right way. And he didn't exactly use it the right way there. He was kind of all over the place. Now, you get through those first 2 innings and his pitch counts at 47, 2 runs across the plate. And you're thinking to yourself, this is not going to be a very long outing. Here's why I do think it was encouraging in the end. He managed to flip that switch, retired 9 in a row, got through the 5th without any more damage. And that run in the 6th inning, I don't even want to blame him for that. I know he gave up a leadoff double, but then to get that runner home, it was 2 of those little dribblers, infield singles off Derek Law. So I felt that was a hard luck run charged to Gore. So in theory, he should only have had 2 runs allowed in, let's say, 5 1/3. I feel like that's the kind of start that a year ago, once it started to go south on him, it would have blown up and turns into a 5 or 6 run appearance, and he doesn't even get through the 5th inning. The fact he did find something along the way, got more under control, made it to the 6th inning with just the 1 more run that wasn't really his fault. My hope would be that this is what the results are on a night when he's not really there, not really locked in. When he is locked in, we know how good he can be. If this is how he is when he's not locked in, that's improvement from last year. The whole idea here is turn those bad games into just okay games. And this was just an okay one from him. We need to see the good, certainly, the next time out or a couple times out. But for what could have been a bad start, I think I want to give him some credit for turning it into an okay start.
Yeah. And, you know, if he consistently can give you 2 runs in 5+ innings, you'll take that. You know, I mean, by 2024 standards, it's actually not bad. You know, I know that's not the bar that we're used to if you've been a fan for longer than like 10, 15 years, but the game has changed. And so that's how it is. I guess the disappointment would be 2 things. A, early in the season, right? Usually pitching is ahead of hitting. And we're not seeing that right now with these Nat starters. Like, it has not been a good first time through the rotation. Now, watch it be Trevor Williams gives the Nats their best start first time through the rotation. Wouldn't that be something? But then B, it feels like these pitchers, I guess Cormann got off to a good start in his outing, but it feels like they get off to these sluggish starts and then they got to find their ways as the outing goes on. You'd like to see these young starters hit the ground running in these outings as opposed to having to like claw back to pitching well. And I guess, you know, that just comes with experience and maturity.
Yeah, it's the same thing I was talking about with the lineup before. You don't want to be going uphill right from the get-go. You want to be able to get out to a good start and now have some cushion and have a pitch count early on that makes you think, hey, I might be able to go 6 or 7 tonight instead of, oh boy, I hope I can get through the 5th at least. So, you know, we'll see. It's one time through. Maybe they're facing a couple good lineups. I don't know what to make of the Pirates right now, except to say they do have a lot of young talent and they are off to a fantastic start. Maybe when it's all said and done, we'll look back and say, okay, they were actually facing a really tough opponent here. And so give them some of the credit. And it's not just about the Nats pitching. But I would, in general, like to see them get off to a better start, keep the pitch count down early, and at least give yourself a chance at, I know this is a foreign concept nowadays for this team, but a quality start. that would be nice here before too long, right?
Yeah, haven't really had anything close to that. The Pirates are funny. They did this last season, as you may recall. They got off to a really good start and then faded badly as the season went on. So we'll see what comes of the 5-0. But yeah, I mean, Pittsburgh is off to a really good start to this regular season. So the offense, it's been an odd deal, right? Bad starts to games, doing some good things later in games. You certainly give the Nats credit for that. The offense in this 8-4 loss to the Pirates on Monday, I would not say was the Nats' biggest problem, but you can't say the offense was that good. Four runs, just 8 hits, 2 for 10 with runners in scoring position. The Nats did draw 4 walks, some impressive walks. We'll get to those. And there certainly were some offensive bright spots for the Nats. In terms of a singular output from a plate appearance, how about the home run from Riley Adams? K-Bert Ruiz was the Nats' starting designated hitter for this game. Adams was the Nats' starting catcher and number 8 batter. 1 for 4 with a 2-run homer. And this was some homer, a 2-run 7th. He had a game-tying 1-out 2-run homer on a moonshot to left field to tie the game at 3, 427 feet per StatCast. Not bad for a guy coming off a broken left hamate bone that he suffered last September 6th. That was an impressive home run.
Longest home run of his career, according to StatCast. And yeah, that my first thought was, okay, all the fear that there usually is with hamate injuries is that you can be healthy as soon as you come back the next season, but very often it can take a while for the power to come back. They think that may have been the case with Robert Hassel in the minor leagues last year. Now, I asked Riley about this in spring training, and he said he felt like that wasn't an issue. He felt the wrist was strong, liked the way the ball was coming off his bat, and you can't argue with that result there. He was the last position player on the team to actually appear in a game. Did not appear at all in Cincinnati. Got the start here with K-Bert Ruiz as the DH, and I think that's an arrangement you're going to see again, particularly against left-handers. That may be a way that Davey can get Riley Adams into games without necessarily sitting Ruiz. So I thought that was interesting that he went with that alignment in this one. We know that Riley Adams has the ability to get a hold of them every once in a while, hit for some power, hit doubles as well. It's rare that your number 2 catcher is thought of as more of an offensive guy than a defensive guy. That's not the traditional path towards it. But if he can be productive, that's a really nice thing to have. And he does hit lefties very well. So I was very encouraged by that. And I think he'll probably be encouraged about the way that his hand feels and the fact that he could turn on a pitch and drive it like that.
So we know that K-Bert Ruiz likes to play a lot, and I give him credit for that. But I do kind of feel like less maybe more with him, and that maybe that does help to explain his not so great 2023 season. Do you think we might see more of Riley Adams this season in order to spell K-Bert Ruiz, at the very least have him as the DH, as was the case on Monday?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. And I think if Adams continues to produce, then you have the basis for doing that, especially when they're facing left-handers, like I said. I don't know. You also have seen these times when Davey falls in love with K-Bert Ruiz and says, hey, he's young, he's strong, he can catch 5, 6, 7 in a row. I'm like, whoa, hold on there a second. Let's slow down. Let's remember the long term, what you're trying to accomplish here with him. I think K-Bert's been off to a good start this year. He didn't have a great game at the plate in this one, but I thought he had a good weekend in Cincinnati, offensively and defensively, for that matter. It's always a risk to use both catchers in the lineup at the same time in case something were to happen. It didn't come up in this. It hardly ever does come up. I'll be interested to see. I mean, he sat Joey Gallo for this game against the lefty. Now, is that because Gallo's off to such a bad start? Is it just the matchup with the lefty? Maybe a little bit of both. But I do think we could see more of this where Ruiz gets sort of the half day off, relieved of his catching duties, but still gets to bat 4 times.
Nats on Monday did get more production from 2 guys who were productive in that regular season opening series at the Cincinnati Reds, talking about C.J. Abrams and Trey Lipscomb. Abrams as an Nats starting shortstop and number 1 batter, 2 for 5 with an RBI single and another single. Lipscomb as an Nats starting third baseman and number 6 batter, 2 for 4 with a couple of singles. So good to see that. Lane Thomas on Monday had a nice game. Starting right fielder, number 2 batter, 1 for 4 with an RBI single and a walk. Thomas in an Nats 1-run third, a 2-out opposite field RBI single to right field to cut the Nats deficit to 2-1. And I mentioned some of the Nats walks being impressive. How about what Thomas did in the bottom of the 6th, a walk to conclude a 13-pitch plate appearance in which he fouled off 8 pitches. And speaking of walks, a man not really known for walks, Victor Robles. He on Monday started for the first time in this regular season. He was an at starting center fielder and number 9 batter. He went 0-for-2, but with 2 walks. And he went 2-for-2 on stolen bases. Robles in an at one run third, a one out walk, and a steal of second base. And Victor, bottom of the seventh, a one out nine pitch walk, despite having been down in the count at 1.02. And he had a steal of second base. Who was this guy? A couple of walks for Victor Robles on Monday. Good to see that.
Did I not say, I think maybe in our season preview episode, that call me crazy, but I thought Victor Robles might be primed to do some good things. Had a good spring. Had a good spring last year, had a good April last year before he got hurt. And ever since then, the way he's been doing it, he's been more patient at the plate. He has run the bases better. He's played defense better. There was a scary moment near the end of this game defensively with him and Lane Thomas. Thankfully, that didn't turn anything worse. But I've had this sense that we kind of forgot about him because of the back injury, but there is some actual tangible signs of improvement from Victor Robles. Now, that doesn't make him part of the long-term plan again. He knows that, the team knows that, everybody knows that. But if he can just be a little bit more and kind of do this to some extent, it's going to do two things. It's going to allow the Nationals not to rush James Wood and Dylan Cruz to the big leagues. And it's going to allow Victor himself to maybe create some value. He mentioned it in spring training. You're not just playing for your team, you're also playing for 29 other teams. He can read the writing on the wall. If he can do anything of consequence, that's somebody who could have value to another team when it's all said and done, and that will benefit the Nats if it comes to that. It's four games, don't want to read too much into it, but like I said, this is not isolated. We saw this in spring training, and we saw it last year before he got hurt, and so I at least have some reason to believe this could be legitimate.
There was a certain poetry to this game because on the Pirates is Michael A. Taylor, and Victor Robles, to me, has entered into that Michael A. Taylor territory of good defensively, not very good offensively, and as time goes on, you don't really view him as a starting outfielder for your team. You know, it's more like he'd be a really good fourth outfielder, but like, what's his long-term future with you as a starting outfielder? And we see what has happened with Michael A. Taylor. I mean, he has had a career. It's not like the guy is, you know, floundered. But with Robles, I mean, look, if he sticks with the Nats as a fourth outfielder moving forward, you could do worse than that. And if he does well, perhaps he can find himself another starting job. I just think about Robles like this. What happened this past offseason, I feel like kind of gets under discussed. So the Nats on November 2nd declined their club option on Robles. Now, it was kind of an odd deal. He remained under team control, was eligible for salary arbitration. The Nats ended up agreeing with him on a one-year deal to avoid the arbitration. But that club option that was declined was for $3.3 million, not that much money. The Nats only wanted to pay him so much for this season. And I think that that tells you a lot about how he's viewed. Like, you know, 2019 was a long time ago now. His peak season was half a decade ago at this point. So he's, you know, just kind of hanging around until Dylan Cruz and James Wood and maybe some others are ready. And I hope he does well. But like you said, there is a writing that is on the wall that's pretty difficult not to read.
Yeah, and he knows it. And he's not shying away from that. He has said all the right things this spring. But I give him a lot of credit because, especially after the year he had last year with the injuries, he could have pouted. He could have been upset about the contract situation. He essentially, through no fault of his own, had a reduction in salary from what it would have been otherwise and came to camp as kind of the forgotten man. All the attention was on the young kids who are right behind him on the depth chart, just waiting to take over. He has done everything right. He's had a good attitude. He has worked to make the changes to the game that they have long sought from him. Maybe it's too late for it to make a difference here, but maybe it's not too late for it to make a difference in his career. And speaking of Michael A. Taylor, he had a great game for the Pirates. Putting the ball in play, doing some things, making them happen for them. It was really nice to see. This was his first game back at Nats Park since the World Series. He was with the Royals and the Twins. He faced them in Minnesota last year, but had not been back to D.C. Fans gave him a big ovation when he was announced in the lineup. And then when he came up to bat the first time, people started cheering and some standing to the point that they kept it going. Taylor didn't really seem to want to acknowledge it at first. They kept it going long enough that it sort of forced him to take a step back, wave, doff his helmet. I thought that was a really nice moment for someone who, I know he didn't maybe live up to everything that he could have been here, but he was really loved by a good segment of the fan base. And for all his faults at times during his career, he stepped up big time in the playoffs for them. He's one of their most clutch October performers, actually, when you look at the numbers.
One of the best postseason home runs for the Nats came from Michael A. Taylor, without question.
Two Tim Shover's here to tell you about Game Time. The Phillies are in town this weekend. Make sure to check out Game Time. What's great about the app is you can see the actual view of all the seats in Nationals Park, and it has the lowest price guaranteed. One feature that's top-notch is Game Time's ticket coverage. Your purchase is covered with the most flexible customer service policy in the ticketing industry. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code NATSCHAT for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code NATSCHAT for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Three-one Pittsburgh. One on, one out. Bottom of the seventh. The set at the belt. He fires. Swing a fly ball. Deep left center field. Beck Sawinski looking up at the wall. And this game's tied. It's long gone into the first row of section 101 over the bullpen. Riley Adams does it. This game is even. The Nationals 3 and the Pirates 3.
You know, speaking of the crowd, so like I said, sellout crowd, 40,405. The Nats for last regular season ranked 23rd out of 30 major league teams in average attendance for home games, 23,034. The total attendance for home games for last regular season, 1.866 million. Do you think that the Nats getting back to 2 million in home attendance is doable for this regular season? Do you think that that's a realistic expectation for this year?
I think it's doable. We actually, in the predictions that I run with my other beat writers, we ask what your attendance prediction is. And I was somewhere in the 1.9 range. So I think it would go up a little bit, but maybe not all the way. You know, attendance is a funny thing because it doesn't happen right away. The team can get better and there's a lag before you really see it in attendance. Sometimes it's not till the next year or later into the season. If they do have some juice going, and if James Wood comes up and maybe eventually Dylan Cruz, and if Lipscomb plays well, some of these other guys start doing well, you can generate some enthusiasm that I think can translate at the box office. But going into the year, I would say it's probably down somewhat from where it was a year ago. It is going to require some performance on the field and some new names with some potential star power attached to those names, I think, to really get a lot more of the casual fans to come back out on a regular basis.
So there are two things that primarily drive attendance, right? It's how well the team is doing, and then it's do you have individual box office type stars? Like, you can be a really good player, but do you mean box office? And there aren't many guys in sports who translate into box office. The Nats have had some of these guys. I mean, Steven Strasburg in that first season was box office, right? His starts were appointment viewing. I wonder with Dylan Cruz and James Wood, can they be box office type stars? Like, not just good players, but guys who generate buzz and attention to where people buy tickets to see them. Time will tell on those guys.
Yeah, I don't know. My hunch would be is that they're not going to be like Steven Strasburg and Bryce Harper in terms of they already come in with a built-in extra audience because of who they are and what we've heard about them. It may have to be a product of their performance. If they get off to really good starts and do some memorable things and start showing up on highlight reels, I think they can create that. My guess is that they're not coming into this, though, with the same level of hype. Few could, you know, few really could, given what we had seen from Strasburg and Harper. But I think this is going to be a different scenario maybe with them.
Well, we want to deliver a shout out to Michelle from Durwood, from her daughter, Anna. Michelle and Anna were in attendance at Nationals Park to watch the Nats' regular season home opener. A congratulations to Michelle for starting a new journey in her career. She's beginning a new job today. She has been such a great example of hard work for her children. And we are all so proud of you, says Anna to Michelle. It is a joy to share Nats fandom with you and to be your daughter. Go Nats. So how about that? A very nice shout out from Anna to Michelle. We wish Michelle all the best. And we thank you guys for being Nats fans and for listening to the podcast.
I love how this is turning out as a way for people to share their personal thoughts, not just with each other, but with all the Nats fans out there who listen to this podcast. Let's keep it going. I know Tim has said that he's gotten a really nice response from fans already on this. Let's see if we can have at least one of these every day the rest of the season.
My goal is for us to deliver a marriage proposal at one point via one of these shoutouts. Will we be able to do that, to propose marriage, to at least convey the proposal of marriage from one person to another? We are willing to do that. I want everyone listening to know that.
Well, now, hang on. You're willing to do that. I didn't say I was willing to do that. I'm not getting down on a knee here on the Zoom between us and sticking my hand out with a ring. That's up to you if you want to pull that one off.
Mark is willing to officiate weddings, for those who don't know that. So just be aware of that as this season goes on. Well, you can hit us up on X at @Nats_chat. You can email the show natschatpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on YouTube. Just search Nats Chat. Our YouTube handle is @NatsChatPodcast. And please click on the thumbs up button and please click on subscribe. We very much appreciate that. We have a website that we invite you to check out, NatsChatPodcast.com, at which you can buy a Nats Chat Podcast t-shirt. This installment of the Nats Chat Podcast has been brought to us by Mason Kalfas at Zenith Legal. Mason Kalfas and his team specialize in placing partners and associates at medium-sized and large law firms in Washington, D.C. and across the country. Mason's number is 202-486-3535. And you can also visit his website, zenithlegal.com. All Nationals radio highlights on Nats Chat are courtesy of 106.7 The Fan. There is more rain in the forecast, so we'll see what comes of Wednesday, but no game for the Nats on Tuesday due to that usual off day after a regular season home opener. So game two for the Nats against the Pirates at Nationals Park scheduled for Wednesday evening at 6:45. Trevor Williams set to be the Nats starting pitcher. For Mark Zuckerman, I'm Al Galdi. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the Nats Chat Podcast.
Wainwright rocks into the windup and fires. And a swing and a high drive to left field, well hit. Ozuna drifting back toward the warning track, to the wall, looking up, and there it goes! Michael Taylor drops one into the left field seats for his third career postseason home run. And on the first pitch in the top of the third, the Nationals are on the board and lead the Cardinals here in game two, 1-0.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.